I want to today finish the first part of the Dura Kashyap. And it is really very limited, although it is apparently successfully approached by the Kashyap. Just one name, do you know? Yes, it's just as if it was successfully approached. It is successfully approached. I'm going to go with it very quickly because you have done this very thoroughly before, really. It just finishes everything that we have done before. Now, we are in pages 84, 85. And as I say, please excuse me for going over it so very quickly today. But even as soon as I do, who tries to her show me, Elizabeth Klein. Now, I want to today finish the first part of the Derech Hashem. And there's really very little, although it is a page, exactly a page that we've got it. Just one moment, is it? Yeah, it's just, I worked it out that it was exactly a page. Mm-hmm. All is exactly a page. I'm going to go over it very quickly because we have done this very thoroughly before already. It just clinches everything that we have done before. Now, we are on pages 84, 85. And as I say, please excuse me for going over it so very quickly today. The Inyan Ashuras Azihu Klau Kilcho Shoni Ishtau Shalu Mehen Inyan Akisorn Veroas Gulum Bechol Bechin Oseyim Beimashin Algeya La Nefesh בין מה שנגיע לגוף, בכל פרוטיהם למח לכוסם, ועוד נדבר לזה בחלק השני. All he says here is that when we have spoken about evil, we have always spoken about it that there is a source of evil and there is a root of evil. And what we have here down upon earth is the result of that source of evil as it has passed through all the many stages until it comes down to earth. And he calls those stages the different worlds they pass through until they come down to earth. And that is the question of his tachlus, which we have spoken so much about and which I am given to understand you have still got difficulty to cope with and to come to terms with. And now he says, and this is something that I tried very hard to explain to you at the last shiur, and that is that when we experience evil here, in whatever form it is the result of Hashem turning away his face, of our not receiving the benefit of the illumination from, so to say, God's face. And I tried very hard to give you a whole shiur on this matter last week. And I'll just mention one or two points so that you'll be able to put it together again. And you will remember that I said that there is a very great difference in listening to a shiur from a teacher, from reading it, the very same shiur reading in the book. There's a very great difference between hearing a shiur directly from the teacher and seeing the teacher, from listening to it on a tape. And it's just not the same. You don't get the benefit of it from the tape. And that is one of the reasons that I don't like the shiurim that I give. I don't like them to be taken. Now, when the teacher is there in presence, it just makes all the difference. It depends very much on the teacher. And it's not a question that he projects his personality on his disciples. That's not what happens. He doesn't project himself at all, but he's mere presence there. And you hear the words emanating from him makes all that difference. And that is something of the idea of Hera's Punah, shall I put it for a book. Hashem is present everywhere. It's just the extent to which he is present. It's not like us in the usual sense of the word. We are here or we are not here. And even then there is a very big difference. You can have a crowd of people and there can be an outstanding person present. And that outstanding person that is present, his presence presents itself to each one completely differently. To some it means a tremendous amount. There are others to whom it means absolutely nothing at all. They can't see anything in it at all. And so, Lahavdil Elef Alfei Avdolos, it is with Hashem Yisborach in relationship to us. He is always there. The question is only, to what extent is he there? And that of course depends to the largest imaginable extent on ourselves. And that is more or less what is going on here. And what he's saying is that when there is evil in the world, it's an absence of the illumination of Hashem's presence in the world. And now he goes on to say that
So the more Hashem turns his face away, so to say, the greater is the power of evil. Now, I just want to explain this a little bit to you. There is a principle with which we deal, and that is called Hastovas Ponav Shelach Kodesh Baruch Hu. It is when Hashem hides his face. The classical example is to a period to which we are coming very close now, and that is the whole occasion of Purim. The occasion of Purim is where Haman wants to kill all the Jews. How are the Jews saved? How are they saved? Can one really see directly God's hand in all this? How are they saved? In the whole of the book of Esther, Hashem's name isn't mentioned once. And of course the secularists have got all funny kinds of theories about this, which are each one is just nonsense, doesn't make sense. The reason is because God is there, the Esther on him, as if he's hiding his face. Where do we see the direct hand of God? Is in the story of Pesach, where the plagues come. There's nothing there that for which man can claim responsibility. There's the splitting of the Red Sea. Man cannot claim any credit for it. It is there the direct work of Hashem. In the story of Purim, how does it all begin? Haman wants to kill the Jews. So, the king gets annoyed with his wife. They've got to cut off her head. He needs a new wife. Esther is chosen. Mordecai overhears two men plotting to kill the king. this is eventually revealed to the king. The king, because of his love for Esther, will do anything for her. And it comes to the time when she feels she can now tell the king that Haman is the one who wants to destroy her people. And the king, because of that, orders Haman to be the one that is to be killed, and Mordecai himself, to say, to take his place in government. God doesn't come into it. And yet we know that God is behind it all. And that is what we call Gestein Punachelar Purifurifu. And so we've got these two principles. The one is Gilui Punachelar Purifurifu, and the other is Gestein Punachelar Purifurifu. Gilui Punachelar Purifurifu is where it is open, you can't mistake it, that Hashem is there and Hashem is active. He can't be seen, but he is visible, his work is visible. Pesach is the finest example. On the other hand, Esther upon him, where God, so to say, hides his face, where do we see that? We see that in the whole story of Purim. And that goes on in the world today. Now, to the extent that God hides his face, that is the extent of the evil that can take place. And then he goes on to say, the Yenevi is Gaber HaTelfes O'elu V'moshlom Yikotesh Telch HaTel V'Yistalkin Matav HaTelfes Shorsha Rivron Shezohar Mishlach HaShihayim U'Nefehem. He says, and so, when these powers become strong and they rule, then commensurately the power of good becomes weaker and weaker. And we've had examples of this. We had examples of this in the last war, where there was the power of evil on the part of Hitler, and this power of evil grew stronger and stronger. What happened with the powers of good? The powers of good, as the power of evil grew stronger and stronger, the powers of good grew weaker and weaker, to such an extent that in Austria, Hitler didn't have to fight. In the Saargebiet, he didn't have to fight. They were ready to receive him. But then it went very much further. It spread into France. And there was a tremendous amount of espionage going on the part of the Germans. And it made they had no difficulty in overrunning France. And there was a lot of difficulty in England. And you had people in England, very powerful people in England, who were supporting Germany. One of them lives just about 50 miles away from here. It is Nancy Mitford.
I believe it's Nancy.
Nancy Mitford. Now, Nancy Mitford had two sisters and a brother. And these four were working actively in England for Hitler. And in 1937-38, they used to fly over from Croydon, that was the only airport that there was in London. They used to fly over to have tea with Hitler in Berchtesgaden and come back and tell England what a wonderful man this was and how charming he was and how kind he was. And this is a man that can save England, never mind Germany, and the good he can do for the world. And so the power of evil grew, the power of good, as the power of evil grew, commensurate with that growth was the decline of the power of good. And I don't have to tell you what was happening in the United States at that particular time also. And the power of evil was so strong that Italy joined Hitler. And one of the difficult things to explain in the war, and there are very many difficult things to explain in the war, one of the difficult things to explain is that Japan came into the war at the time that it did, against America. Because when Japan came into the war, then the writing was already on the wall that Germany had lost. And that is the time that Japan came in. But that is the power of the evil. It spreads and it spreads all over. Yes, Jesus.
Is there evil coming?
Excuse me.
Is there evil coming today, or does that depend on the person who's
what the answer to that, I was hoping nobody was going to ask that question. The answer to that is that as far as the world at large is concerned, there is Hastoris Olam. As far as the individual is concerned, there are times when they are feeling for the Kodesh Baruch Hu. But as far as the world is larger, that is, we are not deserving of that. Not as a Jewish people, we are not deserving of it. And of course, this is a great struggle that is going on between the secular and the sacred. It's going on in the whole world, and it's going on especially amongst the Jewish people. Within the Jewish people, in the ranks of the Jewish people, there is this great struggle that is going on. And the Holocaust is one of them, where it's so clear what the difference is. The secular approach is the Germans did this to us. The religious approach is let us examine ourselves and see how far we are responsible for it. Quite a different approach. And so it is with everything that is going on. The struggle between the secular and the sacred is a very great struggle. And it's the same as the struggle between good and evil, between light and darkness. This is the struggle that is going on now. And it is us towards Puni. I mean, Hashem is there, in spite of everything that is going on in Israel. But we've got Israel. And, I mean, it's inexplicable that after the war, when we were so weakened, we should have got Israel. And that it should be in existence, it's been in existence for so long already. I mean, that in itself is inexplicable. But it's Hastoris Olam to such an extent that the secularists can say, well, just look what the Israeli army is, how powerful the Israeli army is, what a wonderful organization the Zionist organization is, and this is what they can say. And I heard a very interesting thing, you know and I've spoken about this often, have mentioned it, how it was predicted in the 1960s that by the year 2000 there will be no Jews in America. And if you take it statistically, sociologically, psychologically, it was right. But that was the prediction in 1960, by the year 2000 there would be no Jews. Now the sociologists on Canada are doing everything they possibly can to get those articles that were written to expunge them, to burn them, to destroy them, to do anything. I can understand why. But really they don't have to be ashamed of themselves. Because they were absolutely, technically they were absolutely correct. The only thing is, there are other forces in the universe. And here we see the case of Hesed, Bonin, Shalach, Kodesh, Baruch Hu, where Hashem, so to say, finds his face. But it's all working out. And Rabbi Scherer, who is a most remarkable person, at the conference in Palm Springs over the weekend, quoted a Dr. Levenberg, who wrote in 1940, that the Agudas Yisroel as an organization is destined to complete extinction because it cannot deal with the realities of the world. It is only the Zionist organization, it was a great work of the Zionist organization. So Dr. Levenberg said it is only the Zionist organization that can save the Jewish people. But the Agudas Yisroel, another few years in its out. Well, that was in 1940. It's 50 years since then. The Zionist organization is out of existence. It is looking for ways in order to justify itself. As good as Israel has become a most powerful institution. It's got an office in Washington, and a very important office in Washington. And Rabbi Scherer made the remark, he didn't make it at this particular conference, but he's made the remark, he's made it to me personally. If we had that power, if the religious bloc had that power, the power it has now, in 1940, the number of Jews that it could have saved. Didn't have that power then. But it's got terrific power now. And it's got the ear of the government, and it's got the goodwill of the government. And there's a respect for it now. And that is for the religious and for the sacred, as opposed to the profane and the secular. So we see there is it, but there is an astonishment forming. It's as if God is hiding himself, but looking through the lattice work, he can see that he is not seen. And this is taking place in the world today. Now, I think we're going to hear very, very much more about it still. As time goes on, and things move so very rapidly today. But let us continue. And now it says, so, as these powers of evil strengthen, so the powers of good weaken. And when these forces of evil are subdued and their power is taken away from them, then it is the good that will prevail. And then at its source, all mankind improves and benefits, and then it has its results here upon earth. So he says, back again to our very start. He says, everything that we have discussed about good and evil, it's the battle between the intellectual and the material, between improvement and destruction, between construction and destruction, between, he'll still speak about other forms of good and evil. All goes back to the sources. Turn over to the next pages, please, 86 and 87. Then, he looks at Madregos harbe yesh be'inyan tevchus orashe v'sadun v'shvos mehem v'derchlo nitro l'nishpa mehem. He says that there are so many degrees of evil, and there are so many categories of evil. He says, for example, there is tumor. So he translates tumor corruption. I think it's more contamination. Spiritual contamination, mental contamination, intellectual contamination. And one hears intellectuals saying the most dreadful things today. Choshech, there is darkness. The Zoamor, he translates pollution, is very good. Cho, that is profane, look against their faith. So these are all different types of evil. Contamination, darkness, pollution, profanity, that which is mundane. And on the other hand, that which results from the illumination, so to say, of Hashem's face is called holiness, purity, light, blessing, and so forth. So we've got all these different words. We've got them in English and we've got them in Loshon HaKodesh, and these different words are the translations of principles and ideas. And we've got it: holiness, purity, light, blessing, and so forth. He says that there are so many details with regard to this, and he's not going into the details. The Omnam, the last paragraph, And now you remember, when we were working on a previous chapter, that where the first paragraph was very difficult, and I gave you a chart, and I told you that in that chart it was contained, and then it became so easy. And the world was divided into two worlds. The universe was divided into two worlds. The one was the Olam Gashmius, and the Olam was the Olam Ruchnius. The one was the physical universe, and the other the spiritual universe. And you remember how we had our chart, how in the spiritual universe there were these forces, whether we call them angels, we call them powers, we call them forces, and how they influence the world that we are in. And then you have the spiritual, the physical side, the spiritual side, and then man, to a certain extent, it comes together. Now that brings us to the end of the first part, and the subject of the second part is providence. And the way that it starts with providence is, so everything in this world is there for a purpose. If it's there for a purpose, then does God want them to exist, or doesn't he want them to exist? What is the answer?
Yeah.
He wants them to exist. If he wants them to exist, will he maintain them or won't he maintain them? He will maintain them. That is providence. That means that he is Ashvoto, and not like this other person says, oh, he's off the table, he was on the table. Is his name Kushner?
No.
Not that he says that it's possible God created the world, but that means that nothing more to do with that sort of thing. It just doesn't make sense. If God created the world, it was for a purpose. So everything means something. If everything means something, then he wants it to exist. If he wants it to exist, he maintains it. My wife keeps a garden, believe it or not. And she wants it to exist. And she looks after it, and she waters it. And she watches carefully over it. She wants it to exist. And that is the basis of providence. But that is for the next year. And now, there are a few things that I want to discuss with you tonight. The first thing is, I have spoken to you, and I was forced to do so, a tremendous amount about the whole subject of Ishtarshus. And that is that the source of everything, that is the Midrash says, everything that exists on the earth below has its source in the heavens above. And it goes through numerous stages until it reaches the form that it is at present. Gave you examples and we discussed. But what I've discussed with you is only a very, very small section of the subject. I want to know from you, would you like me, whilst we are doing the second part of Derech Hashem, to go further into that subject, or have you had just about as much as your delicate organs of intellectual digestion can take? What does that mean? Would you like to go further into the subject? Do you think you could take it? Betty, do you think you can take it? All right, you can take it. Then as we go on, I'll just... Now, I want to speak to you about something else this evening.
Oh, thank you.
Please, just pass this on to Sheila. That is for Shimon. So I'd rather give it to you than post it for Peck. To reach this place where you'll take 10 days, isn't it?
Only expecting
a right. What I want to discuss with you today is the following. I decided to do Derech Hashem with you for a number of reasons. It's a very important work. my wife was of the opinion that since it is such a terribly difficult work, I should have started with this illustration. And I cannot say that there haven't been many times since we started this work that I didn't feel that that would have been the right thing to do, that I should have spent time on the Siddha Shishori. The only thing is, I think the Siddha Shishori was not quite the same sort of challenge as the Erech Hashem. However, there is something that is missing in our work. Now, you know, the Dismetrish is built up on Torah and on Musa. Musa has two distinct aspects to it. There is the theoretical and there is the practical. Two distinct aspects. The theoretical, we do a tremendous amount of the theoretical aspect. What we really come down is on the subject of the practical. I don't think there is enough of the practical. Now, this has been giving me the thought for a very long time. Many months I've been working on it. And eventually I came to a decision. And that is, I want to have a series, and there will be a break. I don't care how long the break is, between each session. I want to have a Midos laboratory. And that is that I will take a particular Mido for an evening, for a session. But this Mido will be done differently from a Shir. It will be a laboratory. Now, you know, when a man or woman enters those kindergartens where they teach physics and chemistry, they start off first of all by going to a class, and they have several lessons in the theory of a particular physical principle or chemical principle. Then the teacher takes them into the laboratory, and there he does the experiment in the laboratory. Then he takes them into another laboratory, and in that laboratory, the difference between the first laboratory and the second is that the first laboratory, you've got the seats and tiers going up, and the lecturer is here at the bottom, and he's got all his instruments down at the bottom, and he does the experiment and shows that it's done. When that is over, the next time they come along, he takes them into another laboratory, and there, each student has got his little table and the equipment, and then he's got all the other things that he needs to get from the shelves, and the student is expected to do the experiment on his own or her own. Now, that is something, the idea of the Midos laboratory. It's not only going to be theoretical, but it's going to be practical also. How is it going to be practical? Those who are interested will see. Now, there are several things about it. We have got, Baruch Hashem today, we've got the synagogue which is Amichot. I'm speaking about those institutions that we have which are devoted to learning, to Torah, to Musar. We've got the Shul, we've got the Bais Medrash, two sections, the men and the women, and we have the Neshei Agudas Yisrael that is very interested in learning and improving their own selves and their own characters, and it is because of their interest in learning that they've got the Gan Torah, which is making excellent progress. Now, first of all, I want to know what body. First of all, you've got to decide whether you're interested or not interested in it. Secondly, I want to know what body is going to make itself responsible. What does it mean, responsible? The organization. What is the organization? The location, where it's going to be held, when it's going to be held, the publicity of it, because I think that this should be open to everybody, the publicity of it, and the way it should be arranged, should it be a fee to go in, should it be free, should it be served, shouldn't it be served, whatever it is. Now, that is it. I want to tell you at this stage, this is essentially a session for a laboratory for husbands and wives. The way I feel at the moment, if there is a husband who says that, well, I'm not interested, or if there is a wife who says, well, I don't need it, then if there is a husband like that, the wife cannot come on her own, and if there is a wife like that, the husband cannot come on his own. That is the way I feel at the moment, because this is essentially a husband and wife session. Now, that is what I want, and the next thing, the first thing, if you are interested in it, if you're not interested in it, just leave it alone. Yes?
Well, I just wanted to say that I was interested in it.
You are interested
and,
in it.
And I think the Neshe Board would like to put that on as a project for Neshe, if that was possible to do that.
Well,
and
I
maybe we could charge them, and then it could go to whatever our decision is of where we would want it to
well,
go.
That is, you've got to decide. But this is something. I just want to see who is here. Well, you notice how, in particular, irresponsible they think the lost people. Have you noticed that? You can't get no ideas, no opinions, nothing. Yes.
The last time I had some idea of how long this would be, over how many weeks or how many months, and what day of the week and time he would be thinking.
Now, I want you to undertake that. I expect to be consulted on it. If you decide, for example, to have it on a Sunday night, I'll probably say, now I can't undertake that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to just consult with me and there's no question about that. But, and how long it will go on. Each series will be completely on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be anything with a B. But this is essentially a husband and wife. And that this is, as it hasn't got very much to do with it in this case, it also concerns husband and wife relationships. But it's essentially husband and wife. And my wife says, I mustn't penalize those men who are not sufficiently fortunate to have wives. We'll see about that.
I was going to mention that, but I feel like one of the things you would say that on the podcast is include a single of the whole people that we know and that we include in everything, right?
Yes, you
it,
know.
It doesn't hurt my way of thinking for them to be aware of these things, but when they are choosing spouses,
I think that's a, yes, I think that's a good point that has to be taken into consideration. I think it's got to be taken into consideration.
I thought it's better than that.
Now, there might be a baby with a problem, but please, don't come to me with that problem. Because I have no intention of solving it for you. That is something that you've got to solve and work out in your own. I had a very interesting discussion with Rabbi Sharon, and that is how one solves difficult troubling and difficult situation. And I have noticed the way he deals with it. It was very interesting. But that is something that I don't understand. Right? Any other questions, observations, remarks? Yes.
I was just wondering whether you're going to mention this to them in tomorrow, the same thing, if you're going to explain it to them. But you leave it to
yes, I hadn't even thought of it, but I will mention it to them.
I think so.
In fact, I had thought of asking two men who are in this complex to come over now and just to sort of get them out on it, you see. That is, perhaps it's a little bit unfair. But that's a good idea. I mentioned it to the man also. But it'll be, it won't be a shear. It'll be a practical shear. It's a laboratory. We're in the laboratory, and I'm going to combine both laboratories, laboratory number one and laboratory number two. So the only response we're seeing is from the Shaya Guru's soil. I'm perfectly ready to accept that.
The meat machine.
No. I don't like the sheep. I don't even like speaking in those groups that they put up with their mechanical voices to prove you the message.
Best thing out.
All right, can I leave that to the machine? We do it. Now, I would like some publicity with regard to it. I don't know how we stand, practically, because still put in something for your
paper. All right.
Hey,
Bob. Right. Today was the deadline. I just didn't get that to you.
Yes, today. All right, Pat. What would it be like if I wrote up something for you? It's something very short, but I can't give any date, just the idea.
Yeah, and I
could
predict that,
maybe. And you're going to be difficult in picking the date. You've got to consult the men also.
We should decide how much we're going to charge, because that's the only
thing. I don't know. You've got to decide whether you should charge or you shouldn't charge. You know, this is something that I don't understand. When I first came here, for example, I explained to you that I come from a society that doesn't like going to dinners and banquets. And the way they used to do it is, they used to send out and make a banquet and send out all these invitations, and nobody used to answer them. They used to say, please come. And when they phoned up the very wealthy people said, look here, how much do you expect me to give? And they would say, $50,000. And he'd say, look here, I'll tell you what I'll do. If I come to the banquet, I'll give you $25,000. If I don't come to the banquet, I'll give you $75,000. Now you choose. That's what I used to do. Only not to go to a banquet. And banquets were free. Nobody paid. The Americanos, you know, the world's province of America. Gradually, South Africa is adopting dinners. Not only are they adopting dinners, but people are paying for dinners. And they are coming, and it's all seats are bought out. Things are changing, you see. Now, in Los Angeles, they pay a tremendous amount. What was it? $2,500 a couple. There are dinners that they charge $2,500 a couple. And the people go, and they sold out. And they have them every week, twice a week, three times a week.
And
people go and they enjoy it. Now, we haven't reached that stage in San Jose, but I think it's time that we go ahead. And there's also the question of charging for it. This is something that's not to be decided here. We decided they've got their people, they work with them, they meet, and then they come to a decision. All right? So I don't have to go any further into that.
And are an incentive and inspiration for the development of other branches throughout the nation.
When Elmer had this feeling that Conrad and I were from Southern California, that one is in a different state. People from outside of California think that California is one state. However, those of us living here know differently. California is really two states, Southern California and Northern California. Southern California appears to have many more things than Northern California, specifically in Los Angeles, which is a center of the state on the West Coast. However, those of us who live in California know that there is one community, one commodity that Northern California has in abundance, but of course is water, money. Money is often used as a symbol for tourists, so it must be that there is also a Western tour in Northern California. That Western is located in San Jose, and of course is the one of Aaron Stafford and his medicine. Life said that Aaron Mulan, which provided mining for the Bonanza and the desert, the Rod and the Redstone have been a source of Korah from the Rod Sun set in the Kansas City of Oceania, Johannesburg and Cape Town, South Africa, Los Angeles, Southern California, and become full circle San Jose, Northern California. So you see, the recognition of our shared birth in San Jose is really a recognition of the Korah that we have been taught. This, of course, is a tribute to our Rod and Redstone. One of the state agreements is that Northern California's major goal is to continue to develop San Jose into a truly unified tourist area. One of our first projects, Rising Earth, was our mission of a tourist goal to be called Bond Tourist. On June 21, 1988, a new chapter in the history of tourist education in San Jose began. Bond Tourist's modest beginning had it located in the shed in the back of one of our mother's homes. Six children and their parents with a core inspired sense of purpose, generating an ever-flowing enthusiasm. With Elmer and Mrs. Connemark at the helm, we would begin the important task of co-assembling, educating our children in the true way. God's first philosophy is to educate our children in the true dear Hathor as we have received it from our lab and medicine. Numerous development is the foundation of our program. At present, God's first is going to 15 children and their license.
One thing that I was particularly devoted to, I wanted to add that thing that I didn't say at the convention, but that was something that I first talked about, Michael Chavez.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think it's going to be recognized in the election of June.